outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the Father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Journey. The God Journey.
You know, the only thing worse about having to get up in the morning and exercise or go for a 5-mile walk or whatever is not being able to. I dread those things. I wake up and go, okay, I'll be glad to get this out of the way. Except the walking. The walking I really enjoy because I talk to people, talk to God, explore stuff. Talk to Zoe because Zoe's a great a talking mate. Today I couldn't go, man. My doctor said, no go, cannot walk today. And I had a little surgery yesterday to pull a growth off my back. And it's fortunately a benign cyst thing, but said no walking because I don't want you sweating and infection. And I'm like, well, that's not fair. I thought I could at least walk. But to be honest, though, Sarah and I did sneak in a mile this morning. It was cool. I promised not to sweat. And
that's something, honestly, Wayne, that I've always really appreciated about you is you're very disciplined in your rhythms. I am not that. And I really appreciate that about the way that you structure your world and your life. Like you have some set rhythms that you are very intentional about carving out space and holding space for every single day. And that's, I deeply appreciate that about you. And I'm envious of that at times.
And it deeply frustrates me that you're not that way.
I know that has been a point of contention in our friendship.
No, it's never been a point of contention.
Mild friction.
Sarah sees a physical trainer and they talk all the time. She's amazed that I have been for now 15 years or whatever, get up every morning and work out 3 days a week, walk all this stuff. And she just goes, he doesn't have anybody train with him. He doesn't go to a gym. He's in there every day doing what he needs to do. And I figure it's a Pharisee holdover, you know, once I commit to it, I stay with it. But
hey, you might as well silver lining that stuff. I mean, if you can turn it into something that's beneficial to your life, why not? Right?
Yeah, I'm not doing it right. Because yesterday morning, my neighbor came over. This couple we're getting to know across the street. Delightful family. And he just came over to say hi. He's been having some medical issues of his own. And he came over and we were just talking a little bit. And he asked what I was doing today. And I said, I'm getting my back cut open. And then his wife comes over with their daughter. And she says, I'm I got to leave the kid with you because she was leaving. She said, I'm going to go set my body, mind, and soul straight in a working out. And I'm going, okay, man, I only hope for my body to get worked out there. I do not hope for all my emotional everything else to be centered in a 45-minute workout. But she does, so it works for her. Not for me. And I get the physical stuff done. The big incentive there is not even my commitment to do it. It's I know I want to eat later in the day. And if like today, I don't know. I didn't walk 5 miles this morning. I didn't work out. I don't even know what I'm allowed to eat that's not going to grow on me and replace the growth I just lost by some other growth I don't need. So anyway, I'll figure it out. Probably gain a few pounds. It's only a few days. It's just a few. I can't work out for 2 weeks, but it's a couple of days on the walking. So I think by Sunday, I'll be able to hit the walking trail again. Anyway, I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And I'm Kyle Rice.
And welcome to the God Journey on a Thursday so we can get some stuff talked out. And I guess we're still going to go down the same road we went down before.
Yeah.
Does God look at sin like we look at trauma? Is sin something that happened to us rather than something we chose? And this is going to drive the evangelical mind nuts. We're planning on doing it, so we've stretched that over at least 3 weeks, maybe longer. So I didn't get a best thing I heard last weekend, but I'm going to get one in this time because I think this describes a conversation I had earlier today, as a matter of fact, and one that part of our discussion now. So my friend Jonathan put this in something I read recently. In 2018, my favorite college basketball team, the Virginia Cavaliers, was in number one overall seed in the NCAA tournament. They lost to the number 16 seed in the first round, which if you don't know basketball, that's just unthinkable. Yeah, it ruins even a great season. You could be undefeated all year, lose the first round of 16 seed, and it's just, anyway, it was after the historic loss. He sat down with his team and he said this to the coach, if you can learn to use adversity right, it will buy you a ticket to a place you couldn't have gone any other way. If you can learn to use adversity right, it will buy you a ticket to a place you couldn't have gone any other way. And if there is any truth, by the way, the next year, the Virginia Cavaliers won the NCAA tournament. So they did buy him a ticket somewhere. That's amazing. But one of the things that I was sharing with somebody yesterday, if I hadn't been through the thing with the church I went through, or the authorship of the book I went through, or even some family tragedy that I've been through, I would not have been the person I needed to be in this last year and 4 months of my life. Wouldn't have been.
Yeah.
I look back at all that going, gosh, that prepared me. That prepared me. That prepared me. To have even sit here and talk about at 70, have I been seeing sin differently than God sees sin? It's just like, I wish, if this is true, and I'm still pondering here, let's make that very clear. And I love the fact that we've got scads of email, blog comments. Other people are pondering this with us, and I appreciate everyone. We don't read every letter on the air. We just don't have time to follow all that. But what you're adding to this conversation makes a difference. I've not had one negative input. Everybody's just saying, wow, is this true? Could this possibly be true? And one person said, I thought was, they were kind of joking, but they said in a phone call this morning, as a matter of fact, it's just something like, you know, what does it matter if it didn't say that, but just said, you know what? I figure if I can believe either one, I'm going to believe that one because it makes me feel better. And I'm going, okay, that's not where I come at this. I don't believe something because it makes me feel better. My biggest question is it true?
Yeah.
But I'll tell you what, all the adversity I've been through has bought me a ticket to a place I never dreamed of. It helped me be what I need to be for Sarah. It's still helping me be that for her without working at it. This is not hard work. I don't know how to convey that. It's not hard to be in this space with my wife. And I know that's because of the transforming work that has been, I've been lied about before. I've been betrayed before. So I was ready. If Sarah's had been my first experience, I don't know what it would have done to me. But God has seasoned my life with betrayal. And I don't think it's God doing it, not necessarily saying that, but my life's been seasoned with that. And it's helped me be in a place now to even think, gosh, could God look on sin very differently than I have my whole life? It's crazy, isn't it?
Really is. I think about that statement and resiliency and building that up. And the first question, honestly, that came to my mind is, what has happened to the valuing of resiliency, of endurance? What has happened to where that's no longer something that's really valued, or it's something that, not necessarily that it's not valued, but it's not something that is being developed in our culture. And especially, like, I think about a lot of the young people that I work with that, man, they navigate some really hard things, and yet their capacity, their resiliency to be able to navigate it is, it seems like, very lacking. It seems like that's an area that very much has to be built up or fortified in their life.
I find resiliency talked about a lot in the world, particularly with our community, the forest fire and the borderline bar shooting of a number of kids. Mm-hmm. The talk around those things is always resiliency. How do we be resilient as a community? And I hear us talking about it. I think where I don't hear a lot is among my Christian friends. And I wonder if this is why that's true. This is another quote I was going to use at some point, and I haven't used it yet. So it's the second best thing I heard some months ago. And this was actually on a sports blog, to be honest, but it said, expecting to avoid adversity is the first step toward not handling it properly when it comes.
Mm.
And I've reworked that quote a little bit. I wrote this, thinking God's love will protect you from all adversity guarantees you won't deal with it gracefully when it does come.
Oof.
And I think, to answer your question, I think most of us hope we don't need resiliency. That, you know, some of those Psalms talk about God will protect him from all harm. And we see those language in that word, and we really, that's the hope, right? God will never let me go through the betrayal of a friend. God will never let me go through the loss of a job, or a colleague lying about me, or a family member telling a lie, spreading a rumor to ruin a relationship. We like to think that one. Now I know those things happen to godly people.
Yeah.
And how do we find the resilience in him? And the only way to find resilience is when it happens. It's be nice. I'm going to go to betrayal preparatory school. It's just not, it's not going to work. It's not principles. It's not, it's in the pain, inside it with God, letting him shape what it is to be loved in a broken world. And that changes you from the deepest part of your soul. And then when something else happens and you see, you know what, I'm managing this with far less anger, far less second guessing, self-doubt because of what I went through before, then resiliency becomes incredibly prized. Because everything I've been through has prepared me for everything else I went through. And I don't know what that's preparing me for now, but I think because we think God's blessing is an easy pass out of trouble, that we don't need to be resilient, or we don't need. I like when you're focused. We talked about a few months ago about mental health not just being a statement about what's wrong with somebody, which is how we always use. We don't use it about physical health. We think of physical health because something really positive. We think of mental health. We think of mental health problems.
Yes.
We don't think about the kind of life and thought I need to live in to be resilient in a broken, trauma-filled, crisis-centered world. We just don't. But I do now, man. I think resilience is the best thing to help someone develop when they're in crisis.
And it's intriguing that you say that, because I think one of the challenges or struggles that I see a lot of young people dealing with or navigating is the question of why build the resiliency? What's the point? And there's so many people that I talk to.
The question is almost hilarious. Why build resiliency? You live in a world that's coming unraveled on all the edges possible. Why would you not want resiliency?
But again, like that circles also back to and highlights the reason why the number two cause for death for between 10 to 25 is suicide.
I know.
Because there's this deep sense that there isn't a sense of purpose or meaning to life. And so then when you look at resiliency, it's like, well, why would I want to endure that? Why would I want to build up any kind of resiliency? Because what's the point? What's the purpose? If life is suffering, why am I even here? If all life is suffering, what is like, what, you know, what's the point? So if I can live the safest, resistance-free life possible, even if it's flat and bland and boring, I'd rather kind of maybe default that way.
Someone who's never tasted wholehearted living, never tasted being alongside someone in excruciating pain and watch their eyes light up with being loved or some nugget of wisdom that opened a door into a way of thinking and living. It's somebody that's never had that experience. And how sad is that?
It is.
Or the hope of it.
The intriguing thing that I would love your feedback on this. And I've seen this like weird, and I'm just teasing this out right now. I'm teasing this
You're
idea.
Pondering,
out.
Are you?
I'm pondering this.
I hear you.
That as cultural espousal to the idea of acceptance and tolerance has become more pervasive, I've seen a decline in sense of purpose and hope. I don't know if there's a correlation there. I don't know. I don't know if those two things are integrated with one another, if there's a tension there. I'm not sure what to do with that, but I hear all these young people talking about how they need to accept, or they need to tolerate, or they need to, you know, whatever's good for them is good for them kind of a thing. But there isn't this sense of meaning in life, the sense of purpose, the sense of passion and drive. There's almost like this resolve to, and I've literally had students tell me this, I just have to make it through. I just have to get through this life. And that's my resolve, is I get through one day at a time. And there's very little hope or anticipation that's there.
Yeah, I hear that. That's got to be where there's no gospel, right? There's no hope. I mean, the gospel in America doesn't have a lot of hope in it anyway. It's just you're a cruddy person and God hates you unless you get on the home team, and then we'll exploit the heck out of you and you can come and do lots of work for us and then find out later that didn't work out either. Been watching too many of those documentaries, obviously.
You have been. You've been fully immersed.
Oh my gosh, that bright shiny people or shiny dirty people or whatever it is. Somebody wrote said I just listened to that the other night, and man, it just it was painful. I'm going, was painful. But I wonder, part of parenting for the last whatever has been trying to take the struggle. You know, part of that reformatting schools, we don't want anything to be a struggle, nothing offensive. We try to protect the environment. And I wonder, when you were talking, I'm going, I wonder if this is helping the butterfly get out of the chrysalis. So it's never learned to struggle. And then when it gets out, it can't fly. It doesn't have the wings. It doesn't have the strength. It doesn't have anything. And I know it's rude to say, let's put struggle into people's lives. I don't think that's the goal. I think if we just see there's enough struggle, and then helping people know how to manage struggle in a way that leads to wholehearted living, in a way that, because there is far more joy in this universe than pain. There is great pain in this universe. There is. But there's far more joy and beauty in the unfolding glory of God's world around us. There is. And people and the noble things that people endure in struggle. And we somehow maybe have lost a value in that, that there is something worth living for. And I think when you take God out of the equation and you take just a struggleless, don't want to be challenged. These kids are not coming through challengeless environments with less struggle,
but less
tools to manage the struggle.
Correct.
And that's what's sad to me. But we were saying we're going to talk about this other thing. that's a good discussion there too, as well. But I'm telling you, I want to really just drill down on this. Could God look at sin like we look at trauma? And the last email I read, we talked about that would change everything. Have you thought about what it would change for you if it were true? Or maybe have you already thought this way all your life and Wayne's slowly catching up to where Kyle lives?
No, not at all. I honestly, that's where the correlation for me between what we were actually just talking about and this idea of the way that God views sin has really been stirring and wrestling inside of me, because I think of the way that I view sin, and there was so much performance towards myself of this perfectionistic standard that I had to try to meet and struggle to try to achieve. And that was, you know, I think I mentioned this, that there at one point early on in my teens, I asked my dad what it would take for his approval, and he listed off several characteristics. And me being who I was, firstborn, super competitive, a perfectionistic Pharisee in the making, is like, okay, I'm going to achieve that list and I'm going to exceed that list. And I think of.
And did it work?
No, no, it almost killed me. Yes. It almost killed me.
And did you get his approval?
No.
No. I think that's what people feel about Christianity, right? I jumped through all these hoops, and then I've got cancer, I've got this, I've got that, and God, nowhere to be found.
And that's because one of the biggest things that was highly emphasized in the culture that I grew up in was sin management. And I think about this idea of the tenderness and the compassion of the way that God views those areas of brokenness or sin or things that are going on in my life. If he looks at it with that level of compassion, what the heck was I managing for 20 years? And the weight and the burden of trying to get it right and striving so hard. And it's not that I don't want to experience more of his holiness in my life. But it's because I genuinely experience that as life now. It's not some management system of shame and guilt that I'm trying to avoid getting beaten by the stick in order to be able to achieve some, I don't even know what.
Yep.
You know, I guess performance-based approval. And that, the idea that sin, if God views sin that way, it just shrivels up the sticks that religion has used to manipulate and honestly beat people with at times into a pillow. I don't know how else to say that. I mean, I don't know. What do you think?
It just, yeah, well, it's not effective. What I think it does for me, when it says changes everything, I think of Sarah in trauma as helpless to something that happened to her. I see sin as, according to the misinterpreted scriptures, we're co-conspirators. We're condemned yes. for it. You've done this to yourself. You've made bad choices. And that's, I see so many Christians relate to sinners that way. There's no helplessness there. Jesus talked about being helpless.
Yeah.
And one of the things in the reading I've done on trauma with Sarah is one of the reasons why somebody can go through a bad experience and not have trauma inside, mm-hmm. and someone go through the exact same experience and be deeply traumatized, is whether or not they have the agency to handle it. And Sarah, at a young age, had no agency to handle what was happening to her.
Yes.
Now, if we believe that about sin, and I think when Jesus says you are powerless in sin, right? That we were unable to redeem ourselves. Paul talks in that same language. There's so much in Scripture. Romans 5 flat out says Christ died at the right time for us when we were powerless in sin. But most of us don't treat the world like it's powerless in sin. We treat it like you evil people doing rotten things. God's really mad and wants to whack you. But you can come to Christ and then you get on the home team and he will save you. So I think the helpless language is one that goes, okay, that really helps. The confronting sin with fear in the old covenant didn't work.
Yeah.
Jesus comes to soothe us into wholeness, whether it's the woman at the well, the woman caught in adultery, Zacchaeus. He's not piling on the shame. He's providing a soothing context in which they could discover what's true. Yeah. And that, to me, that's exactly what, so I'm going, okay, that's a real correlation there. Sin management is blame and educate. Right?
Yes.
Blame,
yes.
Educate, and then willpower. Try harder. That's it.
Yep.
The idea of getting to some kind of healing with trauma is you're providing a place, a safe place to struggle with what's true. And then as you discover what's true, even the painful bits of what's true, there's healing in it.
Yes.
Because there's no blaming going on. This happened to you. It's not something you chose. And so many times, even when we talked, boy, 40 years ago, and the whole gay rights thing, you chose this. And gay people were saying, I didn't choose anything. There's stuff going on in me that I didn't conform to what everybody else was doing. And people made me feel like I was a pretty cruddy person because of that. And that was not helping anybody. Wasn't fixing anything. So sin management is about punishment. Trauma is not about punishing anybody for anything. It's not trying to create an alternative world so worse you'll stop your trauma behaviors.
Yes.
It's how do we untangle those behaviors? And that's the language we've been using with the whole transformation thing. Is how does God untangle in us what got broken? So that's what it means when I say this changes everything. For me, it does. And the fact that we didn't have agency as little infants struggling with the self-preferring lifestyle to make everybody obnoxious, everybody around us annoyed if we didn't get what we want. That we're doing that before we have any sentient choice about anything. We have desires in us, some good, some bad, that come from childhood. And then, so we not only had the agency to manage the sin that was coming at us or the shame that we felt, which is also true of trauma. We also didn't have an attunement with God because we were estranged from him. And I know people like to blame that on God. God destroyed God. No, God didn't. We did. Shame, sin and shame make us estranged from the Father that we have who wants to be attuned to us and to our needs and us attuned to him and his needs. All that language for me is far more redemptive in helping somebody lost in sin than all the language I learned about sin management and religious performance and guilt and fear of punishment will motivate you to do better, which, and here's the trick, I think, it can for about an hour and a half. Fear can help you live better.
Yes.
But then you're going to slide right back into it because there's no sustaining unless you sustain the fear, which is sometimes what the worst kinds of Sunday morning services are all about. We just beat on the people for not being good enough. So they go out of there charged up to try and be better, but that doesn't last till Sunday afternoon.
Yeah.
Then they got to go get beat again. That's what I mean by, Okay, yeah. This changes everything for me. And I'm kind of getting pretty far down this rabbit hole now because I see what this other has done for my wife. Mm. And I see what loving her in that has done to me. Mm. And treasure every bit of it. That agency, lack of agency, and feeling of abandonment is the very thing that sets up trauma. And it's the very thing that sin is. Born in sin and born in shame and feeling estranged from the God who made us sets us up with abandonment issues, rejection, all that kind of stuff. And then that makes the gospel, okay, the gospel is really, really good news. God's saying, look, we can be comforted even while we're still broken. He's not counting our sins against us. I'm not counting Sarah's trauma against her. And we're trying not to count it against her grandpa and the other influences in her life. We're trying not to go there, but it's ugly and it needs to be redeemed. And God is the redeemer in the broken creation. And to me, that's a better, that makes more sense of the cross story I started telling 30 years ago than any of the sin management stuff ever did. This is the way I find God's been treating me, and I've been letting God treat me this way. I don't condemn myself when I struggle, when I have pain, when I fail, when I make a mistake. I don't go to a condemnation. I just go to Jesus and saying, what is it about your love I don't know? I realize I've been doing trauma stuff with God in my own heart for 30 years because the loved message took me to a different place. And there was a dissonance within how you talk about sin and is that just excusing sin? All those worries. And I think we said it last week. The Bible wasn't written for people who don't want righteousness. It's written for people who can't find it themselves and want to find it in Jesus. It's not written as an excuse. So you can sin all you want and God doesn't care. God's wanting to heal us from the places we got twisted and broken. And that's a worthy journey.
And that's why the relationship, that's why this whole thing has to start with knowing you're loved, knowing you're delighted in, living as the beloved. If you don't start there, but when you start there, when the relationship is authored in love, his unconditional love, and I know you don't like that, but like his love.
I get jumped on for whenever I criticize it. It's just fun.
But the love that he has and sitting there, even in the midst of our brokenness, there is a kindness, there's a tenderness, there is no, here is the list that you must meet, and then I will come in and love you, and you will get to feel the experience of wholehearted life. No, that's not what he says.
But that's what we teach.
I know, that's what we teach.
It doesn't start with love. It starts with performance, repentance, you trying harder. Then you get to a place where you can have the comfort of God because now you're pleasing to him. And it's amazing. We've taken this incredible gospel and we folded it right back into the same performance issues of the old covenant. We skipped it. Boldly, we can come before the throne of grace. Not boldly because, hey, we deserve it. We're awesome. No, because God just says, I love you. I see you harassed and helpless, and I just want to walk you into something that's living and real.
And what we're talking about is as far as like and teasing out and unpacking in regards to the concept of sin, that sounds much more like an interaction with the concept of sin. Like so what we're unpacking sounds like something that's born out of love, not that's born out of performance or born out of, this old space. It sounds like something that a very caring, loving father, how he would interact with his kids. It just does.
And the purpose of the cross was to reconcile. Most of evangelicalism has a legalistic quid pro quo to help you get what you need to go to heaven. Instead of, no, Jesus wanted to bring us back into this tender-hearted relationship with our Father that can entangle the Christmas lights or the gold chain or whatever it is that got tangled up in us. Let me read you some of that. We got so much good stuff from other folks. This is from Jenny, our friend in the UK, who's known some incredible need in her life. We've read some stuff from her before. She said, the words that popped into my mind about this topic was trauma doesn't always lead to sin, but sin always comes from trauma. And again, we're not trying to minimize trauma. We're just saying sin is its own trauma. She goes on, sin feels like the symptom, whereas trauma feels like the root cause. When we have a gaping wound or trauma, we might scrabble around for some convenient materials to plug the wound, to try to stop the blood flow. In this way, we can use sin to try to plug the wound, maybe even convincing ourselves that it's saving us. It's become a coping mechanism, a means of survival, a comfort. That's an interesting way to think of sin, but that's true for so many of us. But eventually, if we don't get stitches and heal properly, we're going to bleed out. If we try to abstain from sin, removing the plug from the wound without getting help, without getting a healer to give us the stitches, then the blood flow starts flowing and things can feel out of control. So if we keep trying to abstain from something through willpower, trying to do it by our own way, we know how, we can't succeed in abandoning it by ourselves, abstaining by ourselves. We need the great healer to work in us. As we heal, we can then gradually learn that it's safe to release our grip on the sin that we cling to and crave. Gradually, if we get help and start to heal, maybe we won't feel like we need to grab the sin anymore and use it as a life raft. Maybe it will gradually fall away like a scab, and we'll actually want this and not view it as an abstention anymore, but more like good riddance. Mm-hmm. When we treat the root cause, the symptom will bit by bit fall away. That's beautiful.
Oh, it's incredible. I mean, that, yes,
thinking of sin as a life raft, it is the comfort that helps us manage our pain. That's often what it is.
Yeah.
Now, maybe not murdering someone is or whatever, but I mean, for a lot of the sin we struggle with, of just self-preferring because I need it to survive. I'm trying to just get by. And to do it by willpower is just like to pull the plug out of something. You may be using a cork, like I had surgery yesterday, so you can put a cork there and stop it from bleeding. But you know what? In the long run, a cork's not what you need. You need a little bit of stitching, and that's no fun. I love that.
That makes me think of a conversation that I got into this week and listening to this person dialogue about some things, and they experienced some very deep love and affection in their life. And as a result of that, there was some comments or even some perception of you're bad or you've done bad. And literally the follow-up that this individual had was, okay, so what? And you just, in the expression, in that person's expression of this, the weight of the condemnation and the shame and the guilt was gone. It was like the poison and the vitriol that the enemy would try to use to take out a person's heart with was gone like that in an instant, because it was like, okay, so what? Even if that is true, which I don't believe that it is, but even if that is true, I'm loved and that's being worked out in me. The life that those areas of growth are still being worked out in me. And I've got an incredibly tender and caring father who says, you don't have to have those perfected yet for not to be the complete and entire recipient of my love without hesitation, without shame or guilt.
Another thing we say about trauma, right? We could accept the fact that trauma takes a long time to heal.
Yeah.
Sin, you got to stop it right now and just, you know, be in an accountability group. So you stop doing that and start doing this. And it's just, I like that. Trauma really gives you the sense that this is a process, which Paul said, the flesh will struggle against the spirit. And, you know, the mindset on the flesh is death, which even that's the abstention of the flesh, not just the indulgence of it, but the mindset on the spirit is life and peace. So I'm involved in a healing process with my father. I'm relaxed in the process, the garden scene in the shack. It's a mess, but it's perfectly in process. Yeah. This is from Sarah, not my Sarah, but another Sarah. And she writes a question for Sarah, but she's not here. So we'll see. Maybe you could tackle this because you've had your own sense of trauma. But I did talk about it with Sarah, so I know what her answer is. She said, do you feel that it is possible to fully recover from trauma to the point of feeling free or not guilty anymore, not second guessing yourself anymore? Will I ever get to the point of not having triggers of some kind? Hmm. Mr. Therapist? How would you answer, Sarah? Silence. That's good. Good answer.
My experience has been that the triggers don't necessarily go away, but the the intensity of them, how hypersensitive they are, does go down significantly. And my sense of who I am and the value that I have goes up drastically. So there's this, it's not that I, even in today, after all the work that I've done, it's not that I don't recognize that there's still, or at times there's still a temptation to go back to some of those old triggers or to believe in some of those old lies or those old conversations about myself that were not true, that I've seen to not be true. And I've been living in the life and the love of those, of the truth in those areas. It's not that there isn't the temptation, especially when I'm struggling, to be like, oh no, that is true. That feels right. That is that temptation is there, but the necessity to respond there, the well-worn path, God's been filling it in. So it's not this deep entrenched idea anymore. His love has been filling it in, and it's a lot easier to resist that temptation now.
When I asked Sarah this, she was saying, I don't know. And I said, do you care about the answer to that? And she said, I don't know. And what we talked about on the walk was, in Sarah's journey, we haven't even asked this question. Is she fully going to recover? Is she never going to have these feelings anymore? Is she not going to second guess herself anymore? We're in a process of God untangling the thing. Will it ever get all untangled before she dies? We don't know. And yeah. Honestly, knowing the answer to that doesn't matter except for trying to find some kind of hope to cling to. And what it keeps you from doing is enjoying today what God has freed in her.
Yes.
Something else may get triggered today. Something else may happen today. But even Sarah being able to so honestly with her feelings with me, with things she used to hide for at great personal cost, when it just starts, she'll just say, you know what? I'm feeling a little of this today. Going, okay, where's it coming from? And we just can talk about it, explore it. There's no shame in it. No, you're a bad person for feeling. It's all part of a process. At the same time, we can look back over 15 months and say, my goodness, what has happened in you is extraordinary. Now, some days it feels like I'll never get better because some of those things are very present and very dark. But I think that thing I shared was a good, best thing I heard this week, stay where you are or stay inside your body, or I heard it a different way this week, which was be where your feet are. And somehow out there, maybe when it's all done, the short-term answer is yes, Sarah, it will be, you'll fully recover from trauma the day you behold him face to face. So yes, you will be free of it. How much of that freedom you get to experience in this age, just go on the journey. Enjoy when you have it today, when it comes up today, get it before him and just see what else happens. And I think Sarah and I are living it that way. We really came back to just, it's one day at a time. So it would be great if she never had any of these responses again. It'd be great. She has far fewer of them. And like you said, at far less intensity than before. Awesome. Let's see how far this goes. We'll find out rather than we know the answer to that.
I think that's I love that because I think for me, that was the whole resonance with the, you know, the accusation of, well, you're bad. Okay. You know, it's like this disarming of the, in some regards, there's a disarming of even experiencing the trigger. I'm not a bad, unloved, unworthy, or just horrifically shattered person because I get triggered. That's okay.
Right.
I'm triggered. Okay.
Right.
Okay. It's
how do I manage it?
Yeah.
Where do I go from here?
Yeah. And his love is still working it out. That's okay.
Yep.
That's okay.
She goes on to ask, what is sin? Isn't it separation from God? And this, my yuck meter went bing, 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 bing. I know we've defined it that way. I know we tell people that because that's what separates us from God or God. And then the lie of the cross is God turns his back on Jesus because he can't bear to look on sin. Sin is not separation from God. Sin in the literal missing the mark just simply means we're not living in the fullness that God has for us. We're just not. So she says, why would we willfully separate ourselves from God if it wasn't some kind of trauma behind it? So she's going kind of where Jenny went. Those who are willfully evil, have they ever experienced the love of God? When does God's love say enough is enough and stop loving sinners? I feel like in the areas where I am unable to give grace are areas where I have not felt grace, where God hasn't healed me yet. That's a good observation.
Yeah.
I like the fact that we're redefining sin. Sin is the twistedness of a broken culture. It's not you missed the mark, you did the wrong things, God's upset, or now God has to turn his back on you. God comes to the garden in Adam and Eve's failure. That's what I think those who are Bible teachers have consistently ignored. Adam and Eve run from him. He doesn't run from them. He's still there. He's still looking for ways to redeem them. He's not gone, oh, gosh, you guys are horrible people. I must turn my back now and go sit in my heaven until you clean yourselves up. That's not God's heart.
No, he still relationally pursued them. He was still present in the garden with them after they had sinned.
Exactly.
Well, and yet the teaching, the picture, the snapshot that we would have is, oh, this garden is tainted. They're tainted. I'm not walking in there again. I can't stand that. I'm not even going to be present in that space anymore because I can't stand it. No, there was a tenderness. There was a seeking out. There was a pursuit of, no, I don't want to leave you there. You made a choice, like you made this choice and that breaks my heart, but I'm not going to leave you there. I want to win you back into this relationship. I want to help that restore that connection.
Even then you got seduced into sin.
Yeah.
It wasn't like they were wanting to be like God. They were, we play that up so that they chose sin. They just chose the best course they thought they had to be like God. And it was the wrong one for sure. And it was one God had warned them about. This is from a friend back east, and we're going over time. Are you okay just doing two and we'll split it into two? You got time?
Yeah.
Because I got a lot more to cover here. And I think,
hold on. Let me just check. I think so.
Well, Kyle did have some extra time and we just kept going. So we're going to split it off into a second episode that we'll run next week right here. So come back if you want to hear the second part of our discussion. Did we get sin wrong?
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.